Welcome to Silence the Mind Cluck. I'm your host, Maria T. Finch, and I'm super glad that you're here. Get ready to quiet that mind and reap the rewards.
All right. Welcome, everyone. This is the Silence the Mind Cluck podcast. I'm Maria Finch. I am an inner intelligence coach, and I am thrilled to have Matt Fleming here with me today. Matt, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so glad to have you. So to start out with, tell us a little bit about you.
Well, I was raised on Central Coast, California, Rio Grande. I currently live in Santa Barbara. My life's been kind of nothing short of kind of a little bit crazy, I guess you could say.
Okay.
I guess I'll get right to it. I battled with addiction for many, many years, and today it's not like that. So I just want to share my experience with people and hope to inspire others to, that there is a chance. There is a chance to, change the way you're living, change the way that you view life, and just have hopes for a better life,
That is wonderful. And that's a message that I think everyone can benefit from, whether you're suffering from some kind of addiction or anything else. I think it's a really valuable message. So tell us about, dive in wherever you'd like to start. What was the time when you were really battling with your thoughts, and what was going on at that point in your life?
I think the whole battling with my thoughts started at a really young age. As far back as I can remember, I always just felt uncomfortable in my own skin, right? I never felt like I fit in. There were some things in my childhood. I don't ever blame my childhood. I think we're all dealt the hand that we're dealt. But it's how we handle those things. And that's just how it made me feel. I never knew my real dad, right? So my sisters raised me, and he kind of split the picture when I was around eighth grade. And so me and him were really close, and not having my real dad growing up really made me feel uncomfortable as it was. And then when he split, I stopped playing sports and doing all the things that we did together. And I was really was athletic, and it kind of bums me out, but you can't change the past, right? So,
yeah.
But I went from, playing sports and doing all that stuff to just not doing that stuff anymore. I never felt like I fit in with, even with my so-called friends, at parties. And then when drugs and alcohol, first alcohol came into the picture, it was like that weight was lifted off my chest. I finally felt like I fit in. I finally felt like I could talk to that girl. I could be a part of the social aspect of things without feeling so uncomfortable. And I ran with that for a long time.
And at what age did that begin for you?
I think the first time I ever drank at a party, I was kind of like a late bloomer in terms of that. I was always kind of scared of the drugs and the alcohol, but I'd say around 14 or 15. And
I don't think that's that late.
It's funny because I've met a lot of people now that are like, oh, at 8 years old, 10 years old, 12 years old. And then now the new generation, I feel like it's just getting younger and younger. But
yeah,
I was in high school. I feel like that's a somewhat normal age to get into that sort of stuff. But I just got right off the bat. This was for me, it made me feel good.
Well, you and everybody, so many other people. I think everyone knows, for anyone who drinks alcohol, it's like, when you drink alcohol, it lowers your inhibitions, you stop worrying about things. And so it's totally understandable, especially when you're young, that you would think, okay, here's the way to go. So when did you start to say, maybe this isn't the best thing for me?
Oh, that took me a long time.
Okay.
So I ran with that for a long time, right? The alcohol was good. And then I found other things like cocaine. And then at 17, I smoked meth for the first time, I was still in the younger age. The meth was never normal, right? But the drinking and the cocaine, that's normal in high school, unfortunately. Yeah. And even all the way up until I was 19, it was still somewhat normal and acceptable with my groups of friends. But eventually the meth and the heroin came, and that's when I started shifting into a different crowd. The people that do the drinking and the coke, those are the still quote unquote normies, I guess. They could do it on the weekends and put it down. For me, I was the go hard 24/7 because this is how I like to feel type of person. So when the meth and the heroin came into the picture around 19, it just progressively got worse and worse and worse. And, by the time I think I was 20, 22, 23, roughly, I was using needles. I was an IV drug user. And at that point, there's no doing it when you want to, you know, it's every day, because if you don't, you're going to feel like shit.
Uh-huh.
Like there's withdrawals, there's side effects, like to where you have to keep going with that, or
right,
you're just not going to be okay. Like it's suicidal thoughts and weird, unfortunate feelings. But yeah, so from there, and there's been a lot of stuff that's gone on. I'm 32 years old now, so it started a long, you know, a while ago. But yeah, it just kept spiraling out of control. At first, it was working for me. I was, you know, at this point, I was living with my. It's funny, at 18 years old, like I had my own place. I was doing all right in life. Uh-huh. You know, I wasn't quite sure what I wanted to do, but I had a good enough job to support myself. And that was like a brief period in between the drinking and partying to the real hard stuff.
Uh-huh.
And when the real hard stuff came around, obviously I lost my place and I went and lived with my dad, the one that, you know, my sister's dad that raised me, and we were close. And I was selling drugs and I was living there and it was okay. He kind of knew what I was doing. My stepmom didn't know what I was doing. And yeah, it was working until it didn't. you know, you start getting caught up with law enforcement and stuff at that point. And the first time, you know, it's not so bad. And it just progressively gets worse. Like it's a little bit worse each and every time, to the point where they weren't letting me stay there anymore. And now I'm homeless living in my car.
Oh.
And then I remember when I lost my car, then I'm homeless living in my girlfriend's car. Or I slept out in the boat in front of their house sometimes, but I had nowhere to go to sleep. Like they had this boat and I would sneak over there and sleep for a couple hours in the night.
Wow.
And go back to doing my thing. And I can't count the number of times I've been in and out of the county jail. Like when you're on probation, it's a revolving door.
Uh-huh.
You know, they put you on probation. They put you in there for, you know, maybe a couple months at a time. I think I probably the most time I've ever done is like 6 months.
Uh-huh.
Because they let you out on probation with no direction, but they expect you to, you know, go to all these classes, get clean and sober. For one, I didn't even have a place to live. Like that wasn't.
Wow. Enough.
So yeah. It's like, I'm going to set you up for failure. I'm sorry, but that system is really screwed up. It's very hard to get out of it. And so I was constantly just going in and out of the county jail like it was normal and going right back to my old ways right when I got out, because all those people I knew and hung out with were the only ones to go to when I did get out. I didn't have any other friends. And, you know, my parents weren't there for me. I mean, I don't like to say that. My mom's always been there for me, but from a distance when she needed to be. You know, yeah. And I wasn't in a place to be helped because I didn't want it. So I don't want to put any blame on like that. Cause my mom's been my best friend, and my savior to this day. You know, I have so much respect for her and my stepdad. But there's been times when they're like, we love you, but from over here, you know, you can't enable people. That's one thing I do want to let, you know, if there's anyone out there that's like struggling with someone in their life that they love, you got to just let them do their thing. Unfortunately, you can't enable them. You can't give them money. You can't let them stay in your house, because I've stolen from my parents. Uh-huh. I've stolen from my loved ones, and I've seen countless other people do the same. So as hard as it may be, you just got to let them do their thing and pray to God that they're going to get it right.
Yeah. And so what enabled you to start to get out of that pattern?
So when I was 26, I caught my first serious charge. It was like some sort of fraud, credit card type stuff. And I was given the choice of 3 years in prison, county prison. So they were going to do it like in county jail, which is, on my opinion, even worse, because county jails aren't made for long-term housing, but 3 years or a year-long residential treatment program. And I thought, well, that's an easy choice. You know, I'll go do this year at this program, get probation off my back, I'll have a fresh start, I'll do it right this time, you know. And so I went to this program called the Santa Barbara Rescue Mission in Santa Barbara, and it was the best decision I've ever made. I loved the place. That's where I found fitness for the first time. The director of the program, LB Chandler, one of the greatest guys, I'm still in touch with him to this day. He was all into working out in his younger years and still is. And he used to stay after work with me and work out with me. I had a lot of downtime there. I went through some of the hardest times I've ever been through in that first month, actually. You know, 17 days after I got there, my girlfriend of 2 years, last time we spoke to each other, we screamed at each other because I had to get clean. It just wasn't working out. She passed away 2 weeks, 17 days after I got there.
Oh.
And I blamed myself for a long time for that, because it's a long story and it a lot of it's fuzzy on how it all happened, but I think I did something stupid, got her car impounded. I went to jail. I went to the rehab, and then she ended up passing away. She had a really bad respiratory problem due to drugs. The 2 years that we dated prior to that, I forced her to go to the ER twice, and they admitted her both times. And this time there was no one there to force her, and she died in the ambulance when her friends.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, it's all right.
So let's get to mindset. Yeah. What were the things that you initially used to adjust your mindset to really be able to take advantage of the program that you were in and to connect with the people there that helped you? What was going on in your mind, and how did you silence the mind cluck that you had in order to be successful?
First off, God has been, like, I've always been a big believer in God, but I really just stuck close to him, you know, praying daily. And it was a faith-based program, so I'm really thankful for that as well.
Okay.
But I had that belief in me from a young age. And so that would be the biggest thing, you know. When I got sober, I told myself that, like, I wanted to be sober, but I also wanted to live a great life. I didn't want to just get sober. I didn't want to be another person that, you know, I didn't want to get some regular job and just do regular things. Like, I figured if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this to the best of my ability, because I've already done the hardest part that I think I'll ever have to encounter, and that was getting over the drugs and the alcohol. Right. I'm like, anything else should be easy for me. Things were going great. You know, I loved it. I had an awesome program there. I moved out of that program after a year, and I moved into my own place with one of my best friends from the program, and still is to this day. Actually, I just spent the weekend snowboarding with him, just got back on Sunday. And so, it was going good, and I thought I had this, you know. That's when I screwed up. I stopped doing all the things I was doing. Like, exercise has been a really big part of my recovery. It's something that got me through my darkest times, like the times like I wanted to let out aggression when I was feeling angry, upset, you know, all that fear, anxiety that would cripple me at times. I would just go and work out, and I ran with that, just like I did with the drugs and alcohol. And so much that I started studying and got certified as a personal trainer, and was working in the fitness industry at this time. But I got out and I got my own place, and I quickly thought I had this and stopped doing all the things and started hanging out with, you know, the new friends I had met, which were good people, but they just drank and partied. And I felt like I had missed out on that. So I wanted to. I thought alcohol wasn't my problem. Drugs were. So I could go drink at the bars. And sure enough, there's lots of cocaine at the bars downtown. And one thing led to another. And within 6 months of that first drink, I was strung out living in my car again.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that happened fast.
Fast. Yeah. I mean, literally from I had my place, I started drinking. It progressed so quick that I just lost my job from not showing up. I had no money to pay my rent. And so I was, you know, of course I blamed all these circumstances when really it was myself doing this. And I ended up leaving my car again. And this is right around the height of COVID, like right at the beginning.
Oh,
I think I
started sleeping
with my buddy right before this. My buddy let me come stay at his house. And he's like such an opposite of me, like successful career, owns his own home, like just a really good guy. He just let me stay on his couch for a little bit. And COVID happened. So it kind of worked out. Like, we're having fun at first and all these things. But I was on that downward spiral once again. And it was progressively getting worse to the point where I didn't want to be around them anymore, because I could tell, like, I just didn't feel comfortable. And I'm sure they were picking up the obvious signs that something wasn't right with me. So I kind of distanced myself, and I was bouncing back and forth between Santa Barbara and Rio Grande. I was, you know, playing the victim role to my, you know, I was always real good at, like, getting my mom and stepdad to enable me. Unfortunately, I could play the part like, oh, my circumstances aren't that great right now, but I'll get it together. So I could get them to let me stay there as long as I wasn't too messed up looking, you know, and I wasn't at this point. It takes a little bit of time to get too bad. While I was up there one time, and I don't know, like, I asked you how graphic I get, but I was doing a shot of heroin, and I was staying in their guest bedroom, and I had some heroin in a syringe, and it was left over, so there was still blood mixed in it.
Oh.
And I did it in the middle of the night, and I fell asleep, and I woke up like my head was in vice grips, right? Like, it was the worst pain. I was pins and needles. long story short, I go to the hospital. They did some blood work on me. I found out that I had endocarditis, which is a very serious infection in your heart.
Uh-huh.
Also having these really bad pains in my back, but I was getting stabbed. They didn't find anything in my back, but they admitted me to the hospital because of the heart condition. And then a week into it, I had them do another MRI, and they found an abscess in my spine, just millimeters from my spinal cord. That was almost paralyzed me. So they did emergency surgery, cut me open, washed it out, did whatever they did. And I sat in that hospital bed for 72 days. I had a PICC line in my arm, which is like a tube that goes up your vein, and it ran all the way and just pumped antibiotics into my heart every 4 hours on the clock for 72 days straight.
Wow.
And during that time, I don't know, it was COVID. I had a single person room. I had no visitors. It was like a glorified prison cell, in my opinion, because I had my computer and my phone, and I had a TV, which is great. And I had a lot of time to think, And, I started working out, and I started doing praying and meditating, and journaling has been a big thing for me. I'm a big fan of journaling. I promote that to anyone that is looking to figure out ways to find out about themselves. But put some pen to paper and really put some thought into it. So I was doing that at that time. I had this really good morning routine going on. I was working out. I was eating healthy, obviously, because they were supplying me with food around the clock. And I had, you can pick your food. So I picked a healthy menu. Like, I wasn't eating the regular food, and life was good again. And once again, I thought I had this. You know, it sounds crazy to think someone like me would learn after all this. I'm healthy again. And I went in, I was like, I'm just going to go sneak out and hang out with my friends. So I had my friend come pick me up.
Wow.
We went and got drunk, and the hospital called me, and they're like, oh, you're not in your room. You need to get back here right now. So I come back drunk, try to fight the security guards. They tell me I could stay. I ripped my own PICC line out of my arm, like, which is this tube, like I was telling you. It was nuts. Like, looking back, I'm like, what was I thinking? Packed up all my stuff, and literally I drove myself to the hospital, so my car was still in the parking lot. I started digging for syringes in the parking lot and started shooting drugs right then and there. It was like 2-3 in the morning at this point. I'm in San Diego. Yeah, Marion. I actually need to go back to the hospital and, let them know I'm doing all right and apologize for all the things all the havoc I caused while I was there, because I definitely wasn't the friendliest patient at some points in time.
So this is now the second big, like,
yeah.
You know, going backwards. So how did you get yourself to go forwards again?
You know, that another year went by, another year after this hospital went by, and another really dark and gory time came for me. I was sitting in my car alone. It was I think it was the dollar store parking lot. I'm in Santa Maria, California. Right now I'm in Santa Barbara, and I grew up in AG. So I'm like, right, maybe not quite the middle, but a gap in between those two. And I went there a lot because no one knew me there, and it's kind of a bigger city, so I just felt like I could blend in without too many people I know seeing me. And I did a shot of what I thought was heroin, but it came out to be fentanyl. And fentanyl is really in everything right now. I know three people that died in these last 2 months from fentanyl. So I did a shot of this stuff, which I thought was heroin, and it was fentanyl. And I remember when I'm pushing it in, you don't push it in super fast. It goes kind of slow. And I remember knowing instantly that it wasn't right, but I was so depressed. And I remember I wanted to kill myself, but I was too scared to do it. And I'm like, I'm just going to go for this. And I kept pressing it. And I don't know how many hours went by or what happened, but I woke up with that needle in my arm in their car. And it's just completely dark, empty dollar store parking lot in the ghetto of Santa Maria. And when I woke up, I just remember thinking, I don't really want to die. I just don't know what to do. And that was my moment of clarity that I needed to get help. I wasn't on probation, which is so funny, because when you're on probation, they're like trying so hard to send you to programs. But when you're not, you have to jump through all these hoops. So I went to probation where they used to, know me by first name. It took me like 2 more months after this, but I finally got them to send me to a detox in King City. It was a free place. I spent the last little money I had. I think I had $25 when I got there. I checked myself into the detox, and I said, I'm going to stay here for up to 90 days, as long as I need to get myself right and figure out a plan. 11 days into that program, someone from my old rehab that I graduated with years prior. You know, this is October 2021. So they reached out to me and said, "Hey, you always have a home here." And I was 11 days into it. So like God had bigger plans for me. You know, I didn't want to stay in King City. I don't know if you've ever been to King City, but it's like a very small cow town. It smells like horse shit. And that's like 12 people that live there. So it's like the most depressing place you could detox and drugs from. But anyway, I put my last $25 in gas, drove to Santa Barbara and never looked back. You know, I got into a sober living. I started moving furniture for my friend that owned a moving company. I knew I wanted to get back into the fitness industry. You know, applied at one place. They turned me down because I have felonies on my background. And I just trusted God that something better would work out. And sure enough, it did. You know, now I ended up getting a job at a place that I absolutely love working in the fitness industry, at a much nicer gym. You know, I work private clients now. I train guys online. I've been trying to learn the online space. It's new to me. I have a coach, a mentor that I work with. You know, shout out to my friend Sean Crane, who is like taking me under his wing and just, you know, he's got a very amazing story too. He's the one who inspired me to get on here and do podcasts and stuff. But my life's just like steadily gotten better, right? It's just increasingly, like I wake up excited for the day today. You know, and I just can, the way I silence my mind clock today is I just like, I have a morning routine and I'm constantly building on that, but it always revolves around waking up early. Like I'm up at 4 a.m. almost every day. Today I woke up at 3. Yesterday I woke up at 3. You know, that's not for everybody. One person's early might not be the other person's early, but I start work at 6 a.m. I'm a big fan of morning exercise. So like if I can get up and go run before 6, it's got to be up by 3, out the door by 4, run and showered by 5, you know, and then work by 6. So it's like, that's my early. But I love to challenge myself like that. You know, this last year in December, I was never a runner last year. I've always been a weightlifter. That's my favorite thing to do. I went to a marathon in Hawaii. I got a chance to go do the Honolulu Marathon, the fourth largest in the United States. And that was like something I never thought I'd possible. And although I'll probably never run another marathon again because it jacked my feet up so bad. And it was, I just wanted to say I did it.
Yeah.
I did find a new love for running. So like I love to wake up early and go run 3 to 5 miles. Working out every day is a big thing. Journaling first thing in the morning, and I have a daily devotional I read every morning that I just stick to that routine, and consistency is key. I tell people that all the time, and I'll be the first to say I'm not perfect, and days happen where I screw that up, but the biggest most important thing is that you don't let that one screw up mess off your entire routine. You know, like we're human, we get back on the horse and we ride it again, and we're constant self-improvement. Self-improvement is a never-ending journey. If you ever think you've improved yourself the maximum amount that you can do that, you're doing yourself a disservice, because it's a never ending journey. It is 1% better every day mentality, you know? And I tell people all the time too, that like, as much as I fell in love with the drugs and the alcohol, I fell in love with the game, right? The desire to constantly have something going. Like the hustle, all these little things, as weird as it might sound to someone that has never done that stuff, like when you're out there living that life, it's like this, it's like a game, you know what I mean? And it becomes addicting. So I kind of taken that mentality and shifted into life for now. I'm like, okay, I'm gonna treat it the same way, but do this in a healthy way. How can I, you know, hustle today but improve my life? What can I do to challenge myself a little bit more? Like I'm constantly busy. You know, and idle hands were my biggest setback in my past. So I'm constantly keeping myself busy.
I understand that, because I think that especially for people who have a lot of drive, it's like you want to fill that, you know, so you want to be doing something, and choosing things that feed you and that advance your personal development and that also enable you to give back to others, et cetera, like using that and turning that into the game. Like, yeah. I think that makes such a big difference, because I think any of us can take anything in our life and put some game around it to make it more fun. Because I think sometimes it's like you go through the motions, you're like, oh, this is just boring. It's like, you know, Groundhog Day again and again. But you think about like, okay, how do I make this into a game? So say that you need to network with a lot of people. Like, how do you make that fun? How do you add that into your day? You know, if you're building your business, like How do you find a way to inspire yourself so that you're excited to get up in the morning and be like, okay, today I'm going to do it this way and I'm going to try this? So when you have those moments where you feel down or you feel stressed out, what do you turn to?
Exercise.
Yeah. Exercise is so powerful.
You know, I can't pin it on one thing. I definitely have my moments of doubt, you know, just more recently since I met Sean when he first got out of prison. He's got a great story, by the way. You should check him out. But
okay.
Was the one that kind of like inspired me to be more outgoing about my history and my past. Like I was always so shy. I didn't want anyone to know. I was scared that people at my work might think. I wasn't open about it. I was so ashamed, you know, and he's the one who basically broke it down to me like this. He's like, it's not even about you. It's about the people that you're going to help and save and inspire to do better through your story. He's all, by not sharing your story, you're doing a disservice to others and you're being selfish. And when I thought about it like that, it really opened my eyes and it really made me be stop caring what others think. And believe me, I still struggle with it on a daily basis, but it's getting better every single day.
I think everybody struggles with that. I think it's so powerful though to recognize that sometimes the things that we feel the most shame about are the things that actually could help others the most. Cause it's like, oh yeah, I've been where you are now and here's where I am today and you can get here too.
Yeah. 100%. And the feedback I've gotten has been nothing but positive. And I'm sure there's some negative feedback that I don't hear about, but it really doesn't bother me.
Yeah. It's like, that's mind pluck. Like that's mind cluck. You can let that go. You can say, you know what? Everyone's entitled to their opinion, but you know, you're on your path and that's what matters.
Yeah, 100%. I really have a passion for helping others. I've always felt like I've been a giving person. My mom used to always tell me, she's like, when you were a little kid, you'd go to the store and get a candy and you'd say, what about Mandy Jeannie, which are my sisters, Amanda and Regina. Like, So I've always had that in me. When the addiction came, you know, it became a little bit more selfish, but like giving back and if you can make someone else's life better, it's truly going to make your life better. I'm a firm believer in that. Just the smallest little things. You can hold the door open for someone. You can give someone a smile. You can ask someone how their day is going. You never know what someone's going to go through. You know, it's so, this morning, something like that happened to me. I went to work early and I was in the hot tub before it was like 5 a.m. And there was one other person in there. I was really just had my eyes closed. And I just wanted to like, I was kind of meditating and someone else. This other guy came in there and long story short, he really opened up to me and started crying to me about how he was struggling with addiction. And here I am at my work in the gym.
At 3
in the morning. And like at first this guy was annoying me. And then I just shifted my mindset, right? I was like, wait, maybe I should, you know, be open to this. It was early. I was in a bad mood. And this random guy, I ended up giving him my number, you know, exchanged numbers. He was a younger kid. He's like 25. And he just really opened up to me for whatever reason. It was so random. And, but that's just another thing. You just never know what someone's going through. And my first thought was keep my eyes shut, like just ignore this guy. And once I feel, oh, wait, here's my chance. Like you got to look for those opportunities, right, to help people. And I feel good about it. You know what I mean? I feel great. I'm hoping maybe, I don't know what could happen. Maybe he just needed someone to talk to. Maybe something bigger will come of it. Maybe you just never know.
Yeah. Well, and I think that those moments when you offer something to somebody, those are so important because like you said, you never know what anybody's going through and you never know if that exchange might've made the difference that he needed for that moment, for the day, for beyond. Like that's a beautiful thing. And like you were saying, you know, saying hello, giving someone a smile, opening a door, all of those things, which unfortunately in our society, I think are no longer just automatic, but it's actually like living that way. You just never know how you're going to turn someone's day around and the opportunity there.
100%.
Yeah. Hello. Yeah. Well, we have blown through our time really quickly. So I just wanted to say, is there any last words of advice, encouragement, anything else you'd like to share with our audience before we sign off?
You know, I want everyone to know that like, if you're struggling with anything, it doesn't even have to be addiction. It could be a bad relationship. It could be, you know, it could be a number of things. Just know that if you're still breathing, there's still hope. I like there's always hope for a better future. You just have to want it bad enough. That's the biggest thing. You just have to want it bad enough.
Yeah, I think it's so important to always remember to have hope and that there are always options. There are always options until you're underground. But until you're underground, you always have options. No matter what's going on in your life, there are always options.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. All right. Well, Matt, thank you so much for joining me today. And for everyone, we'll have information in the show notes for connecting with Matt if you would like to do that. So thanks so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay. My pleasure. All right, everyone. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Thanks for listening. If you found this content helpful, please like, comment, and share across your social media. Are you sick of mind clock clucking up your days? Book a free initial consult with me at mindcluck.com and let's silence it. Thanks and have a great week.